I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
Sutton's, suppliers of gardening products since 1806, sponsor the Plant-Based Podcast. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
We're here enjoying a lovely cup of herbal tea at the Hackney Herbal HQ with Nat, and we're going to learn more about the wonderful world of herbs, all the way through from herbcraft to caffeine-free drinks that you can create with herbs, also how to use herbs in the home for quick remedies, and of course using them in recipes and for getting all that goodness out of our lovely herbs. I've loved herbs ever since I was a really young kid, but Nat is going to tell us more about the story behind Hackney Herbal. So how did it all begin?
Similarly, I also really liked herbs from a young age. When I moved to Hackney, and I was living in a house that didn't have a garden, and I ended up joining a community garden just to have some space to grow some stuff, meet local people. And through that, I became really interested in growing herbs and learning about their uses, and also kind of met a lot of people who also had similar interests in herbs. And we got some funding to run some projects and some courses just to try and get more people involved. But I always found that kind of applying for funding and then doing a project and courses was quite annoying, because it's hard then to get funding again, and we kind of wanted to be a bit more resilient and not have to rely on other people's decisions for funding. And at the same time, I noticed that lots of community gardens and people's home gardens and even in public spaces, herbs were just everywhere and were really abundant, and people weren't really picking them that much or making that much use of them.
Okay.
And so my idea kind of came that what if we harvested some of these herbs and created tea blends that we could sell locally, and then use that little bit of money to run the courses which then teach people how to use them.
Wow.
So that's kind of how it all started.
Well, that's incredible, isn't it? Where did you get all your knowledge from, though?
I did a couple of just like short courses at other kind of gardens in London, and then I just read a lot and kind of taught myself along the way. And I think because gardening, I sort of learned in a similar way of just very practical. I did a permaculture course and found that there were lots of people wanting to share knowledge. And also the community courses were great, because people from, especially in Hackney, all different cultures. And people would always be like, oh, in this country, in my country, there's this herb, and like, don't know what's cool, but we use it for this. And people got really excited about sharing sharing that knowledge. So I kind of learned a lot myself, but also learned from lots of other people along the way.
That's great. Cool. It really helps you learn, because we always think in the UK it's that sage, mint, thyme, chives, it all feels like the same, doesn't it? But
yeah.
Great to learn outside of that. I've got a couple of questions before we move on. Kind of, firstly, what has made the difference in success? Do you think being in Hackney, an area that is a little bit alternative, people are encouraged to have, you know, nice, interesting hobbies, not as much as you would in a small town in the countryside. Do you think that's made a difference, as well as the timing? Because a lot of people are getting back to nature. Kind of, I guess what I'm saying is, why now?
Yeah. I think definitely. So somewhere like Hackney, we've got a lot of really nice green spaces, but equally there's loads of new flats and buildings where people have got, you know, maybe they're lucky if they've got a little balcony space. But a lot of people who don't have access to kind of green space, or even green space they can kind of get their hands dirty in. Like, the park's great, but you can't, like, do that much in the park. But I think also I think Hackney Herbal was really unintentionally planned for the kind of wellness, well-being, explosion. So a lot of people really just interested in kind of looking after their health more and seeing what they can do more, more natural ways of doing that. And also people getting more into plants and nature. But I think that's kind of, it just happened that that was the same time as we started doing
it. I'm just wondering if, would it have worked like 15 or 20 years ago? Because, you know, we always talk about this in the podcast, don't we, Ellen? Yeah. When we were kids, we were ashamed to be interested in plants. And when I was 13 years old, I was making all sorts of herb concoctions, but it definitely wasn't something I was telling my friends that I was doing. So I wonder if, you know, it is the time now and that's why it's been such a success.
Yeah, I feel like it's come much more into the mainstream now. And especially with herbs and kind of making your own remedies and things, there's like a newfound kind of interest and a newfound respect for it. Yeah. And a lot of things, like even kind of when you look at what some of the money from research is going into, like there's really interesting research on rosemary, for example, for things like dementia and Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of stuff that in the past people will be like, oh, herbs, they don't really work. And it's just like what hippies do in the field. Whereas now I think there is new respect for it.
Yeah, we often say it's a golden time.
It is because we're far more aware of what we're using and what we're putting in our bodies, and that's partly due to the fact that we have access to so much more information. And so, you know, sometimes when you read certain facts and, you know, scientific research, it can be quite scary, can't it? So we look for other ways to help ourselves, and that's connecting with nature. You know, by means of eating or going outside and gardening. So you've hit it bang on time.
Yeah.
And it's pretty handy being in Hackney since you're Hackney Herbal, really, right?
So, I mean, it started here because this is, like, what, you know, where I live. It's my community. It's, like, the part of town that I love because I've been, you know, been here for, like, nearly 8 years now. And I think it's also worked well being here because there's lots of like craft stuff here and artisans. Every, you know, there's new like shops, and there's a lot of people running kind of small scale or running independent businesses or people running their own stuff. And I think people really buy into that. So people will offer, you know, when we've done markets, people will be like, oh, I really want to get a gift for my mum to show her, like, you know, this is from where I live now in the city.
That's cool.
Nice, and I think people really buy into that local, you know, kind of that whole idea of shopping local.
So it was meant to be, basically. Yeah. Hackney Herbal was meant to be.
Yeah. But it all feels like an antidote to technology, doesn't it, in a way? Like, as we felt we were all getting more absorbed into technology.
Totally.
It then started to reverse a lot, and then we're getting back to those natural remedies. Ironically, we find all that support and information online, but
but then hopefully we're kind of trying to create that balance. I wouldn't want to take technology away, but just to balance it out perhaps somehow. You know, you're obviously passing on all of this fantastic knowledge that you've got, you and the team here at Hackney Herbal, and you do courses and workshops, don't you? So can you tell us a bit more about those?
So we kind of run, I suppose, as well as, you know, selling the tea, our main passion is around teaching people other ways of doing it. So we're not set out to be like a new big herbal tea company. It's more about showing people how they can do a lot of this stuff themselves, and just do it in their own homes and their own gardens if they've got gardens. So our courses are all around everything from kind of growing herbs, whether it's on a balcony or on a windowsill, to making their own teas and making simple remedies. So this time of year and kind of going into the winter, we do a lot of things like making cough syrups, making kind of other infused things like cider vinegars and things that you can use to support your own well-being. So the aim is to like kind of pass on enough knowledge and confidence for people to go away and then try it at home and have the confidence to do that, and show people where they can buy some of the ingredients and things, and just try and take away this idea that to do this stuff is really expensive and really difficult, because a lot of kind of mainstream health wellness stuff comes with quite a hefty price tag, and it doesn't need to.
And also, I guess, specifically, like, especially where you're based, you've got, there's obviously lots of flats and apartments around here. So it's showing people that they don't need a really big space to do it. You can do it in super small spaces.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's been a whole wave of people who have, like, gone through the whole like grow your own thing, got really into it, and I think for some people that's still quite like daunting and a bit overwhelming. And I think for some people, saying like the nice thing about herbs is you can grow pretty much all of them in pots. Not everything on your windowsill, but you can grow some things like basil and coriander and things, and it's kind of showing people that you can do a little bit, even if it doesn't grow into a massive plant. It's still a way that you can.
Herbs are probably one of the easiest edibles to begin with, aren't they, really?
Yeah,
exactly. And a lot of them are perennial, so, you know, as long as you don't kill it or it doesn't get killed by something else, you don't have to replant them every year, a lot of them. So it's just easier, and they're much more forgiving plants than vegetables.
Okay. Where do you grow your herbs, though? Have you got a patch at home, or
Yeah, so I've got a little garden at home where I grow a lot of stuff. But the project, so we have, there's a community garden on Mare Street where I kind of started out volunteering. So there's lots of herbs growing there. And we also have a little, some raised beds at Hackney City Farm. So we grow some of the stuff down there, and they've been really supportive of the project. So we run a lot of workshops and courses there. And then we also forage, so kind of all around the marshes, kind of on the edge of Hackney is amazing for things like elder and nettles.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Loads of like things like hawthorn. Yeah, it's amazing, amazing resource. And it's also somewhere which we tell, you know, if you haven't got any space or time or you just don't want to grow things, there's loads you can just go and find if you can, you know, if you go out into that area.
But it's... There was an article recently about fungi, and people were starting to get annoyed that people are foraging fungi. Yeah. Do you think that will then start to affect how we're picking elder in the wild, and nettle leaves and even blackberries?
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually, because things, I mean, especially, like, one thing is obviously really being careful and knowing what you're picking, because there's also a lot of stuff that will kill you if you pick the wrong thing. The thing I've noticed about elderflower is that people, because a lot more canals now on the canalways, and there's loads of elder down along all the canal kind of pathways. And I've kind of noticed last year there's not that many berries on a lot of the trees, because obviously people are going there and taking all the flowers, and then you don't get the berries in the autumn. So I think it's, you know, it's that thing of like, not every, you know, given our population size, not everyone can enjoy it if it's a really small thing. But just, we try and tell people to be mindful when they're foraging for things, and to, you know, to pick from different areas and not take like all the, you know, rose hips off one.
Because there are a lot of plants you wouldn't grow in your own garden, aren't they?
Yeah, it's just being very aware. It's just being respectful, isn't it? I think to nature and other people at the same time. You and I met, didn't we, on a workshop with Thrive, Social and Therapeutic Horticulture. So it's all to do with, you know, working with plants and gardening to help with physical and mental illness. And I know you implement some of those well-being things here, don't you, at Hackney Herbal? I mean, you do courses and...
Yeah, so we do... So as well as our kind of ticketed events and open workshops that anyone can just sign up, buy a ticket and come to, we run a lot of free community stuff. And that's sort of, again, where a lot of the passions for starting it in the first place and trying to make this knowledge and... teaching people or sharing ideas around herbs as free and accessible as possible. So we work in partnership with a couple of mental health charities. So we work with a place called the Centre for Better Health and also our local Mind. And we get some funding to run courses there. And as sort of drawing on, it's as much as the activity itself of obviously growing and being outside and making things, which is, you know, mindful and kind of takes people away in itself, as well as the actual remedies that people are being taught about. So for those classes we talk a lot about herbs that are very calming, that are good for stress, things that are good for sleep. It's kind of a big focus of those, of the more kind of therapeutic side of what we're doing.
I mean, they just link in with well-being, don't they? They're intrinsic, I think, because your herbs are good for you in many different ways, but it's also the fragrance can stimulate memories, can't they? And they, you know, the touch and everything about them, and using herbs to help people's well-being is something we should probably do far more. So what you're doing here is really, really fantastic.
It's really cool.
It is really cool.
In part two, we're going to find out more about kind of the cosmetics, the cooking and home remedy side. But before we move on, is there any kind of... I love the folklore around plants. There's a piece of folklore about how Camilla Mollis. I don't know if either of you guys will know that.
Only that it just grows everywhere.
No, but do you know the folklore about the water drops?
No.
Yeah?
Oh, tell us.
No,
tell
you
us.
Tell it.
No, you tell it.
I might get it wrong. I don't know. It's a lady thing.
I remember it. So if you've ever seen water on
that
on the
looks leaves, beautiful.
Yeah, and so in the past, the alchemists would collect that water and then use it as part of their potions and things that they would make up as kind of like a really pure form of water.
But this is where folklore is. There's so many different stories, because I heard that the alchemists then used it to help ease menstrual pain in ladies.
Yeah, so it's used for a lot of like women's
what, just the raindrops.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you plant it, you're going to have a lot of it. So go ahead and collect that water.
It's such a beautiful flower. How can you not?
It is, and it's actually really lovely to cut and put in with other cut flowers, but it's just a nightmare when it starts self-seeding.
But
anyway,
any other folklore that you know, or any that you've tried yourself?
Oh, I feel like I should try and think of a really good story here.
Make one up. We'll never know the difference.
I actually have...
It's only us. No one else is listening.
I don't know how much... It's not so much folklore, but it's a really good herb story that I always tell. Okay. And it came from the caretaker of this building, Oki, who's this great guy. And he would often see me coming in at the studio when we first moved in. He was like... What is your business? He's like, you've got a business with leaves. You've got leaves in there. And I was like, explaining kind of what we do. And he was telling me how, so he's from Nigeria originally. He was telling me how in his village, I think it's his auntie, it was, you know, the woman who everyone goes to when they're sick. And he told me this story about how the hunters from the village who would go out into the bush and gather all the food and the berries and things. They were out one day and they were, by accident, they shot... there was like a rogue shot that hit like a gorilla, and then they watched how the mum gorilla, I imagine, like took certain leaves and different plants to kind of put on to like clean the wound, and then take a different plant to then dress and kind of treat the baby, and then they collected all those things and took them back to the village, and then they just they kind of took one of their goats or something and just made a cut, you know, kind of. Made a wound on it and then followed the same thing and found that those things worked as like a really good, like one was obviously, you know, the antifungal, antiseptic cleaning thing. The other thing was a different leaf that probably had something that stimulated new growth. And I mean, whether it's true, it's just a really great story. Yeah. It was also one of the things they always talk about was how we've learned a lot by watching what animals do in nature.
Yeah,
we've
absolutely.
Got a lot of our knowledge from that, and how animals have that intuition of knowing to
just
like
knowing what to
go
use.
To the hedge and eat something.
I mean, I'm partly excited by that story and partly feeling really sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they took like a bad situation and learned something from it. Yeah.
But what about the goat?
I think it was fine. Yeah, they didn't kill
plants.
They didn't
kill the goat. Anyway, thank you so much. We're going to talk a little bit more about herbs and what we can do at home. So some remedies and things about cosmetics and that kind of thing as well.
It's so great to learn about Hackney Herbal and to spend some time in their Herbal HQ as well.
I know, it's really cool.
Really loving it here. And, you know, we're drinking the special tea blend too. I've always loved herbs. And I don't know if I told you, Ellen, but when I was a kid, I had a herb nursery as well when I was just 12 years old.
Did you?
I was selling herbs. Yeah, through mail order, through adverts in the back of Gardener's World magazine.
Wow, that's
such an entrepreneur.
You are such an entrepreneur. What were you growing?
I was growing like about 20 different types of mint, 15 types of thyme, sage, all the colourful sages as well. I used to have them laid out alphabetically in my back garden. Took over, you know, my dad's vegetable plot with my, you know, herb sales. And I was selling them through the post, but also at the local WI market.
Yeah.
And at weekends, making up all these crazy remedies and herbal teas.
You were a true
dandelion
plant
coffee. I was really, you know, always doing some crazy experiment with herbs.
That's super cool. And
I was just fascinated by them.
They
you know?
Are fascinating. Mm. All of the herb, you know, all of the properties that they have for us and our health, not just their fragrance and their, you know, beautiful look. And I grow herbs on my balcony, so you know, here in Hackney, obviously there's loads of apartments and
you don't need much space
flats.
At all.
You don't need much space at all, and I've got all sorts growing on the balcony. I've got some stevia growing.
No way, the sugar plant.
Yeah, the sugar plant.
And do you
very
use it in
sweet.
Your cups of tea?
Yeah, I don't have sugar. I would use that instead if I need to sweeten anything. Uh-huh. I've got the mushroom plant, which is quite cool. But I've got rosemary and parsley, you know, thyme, sage, all of those herbs.
The flavours are all
the
so exciting.
The flavours are fantastic, and you can grow them anywhere. And there's lots of things you can grow anywhere, as Nat is about to discuss.
There is,
with
well,
us.
Yeah. We're going to talk about one of those taboo plants coming up, and I wonder if anyone out there has tried it.
So before we have a chat further about using herbs in cosmetics and other things that we can do at home, I think we should just have a little chat about cannabis.
Oh, what a taboo!
Dun, dun, dun. You know, it's you hear other communities and countries using it medicinally, and we hear fantastic stories about that as well, and great outcomes. And it's not really used here in the UK in that way, is it? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic, because just as you've said, like, I've heard from lots of the people that we work with, a lot of community members who talk about how they use it and have used it medicinally, and how their, you know, their in their ancestors have used it in really positive ways. And I think it's also quite an interest. It's also quite an interesting one to discuss in terms of young people as well, because there's obviously a lot of problems with young people using a lot of cannabis, and it's sort of almost like a really good entry point to talk to young people about plants and the power of plants and other things, because it's sort of like, you know, if you think that one thing that you're smoking is the only thing that's going to have a positive effect on you, like, what about all these other plants that may be kind of safer and like less addictive and all that kind of stuff? So it's quite an interesting entry point, I think, for a lot of people who might not kind of
be interested
in seeing this as kind of very flowery, like hippie.
But they, you know, they have to realise that they are actually smoking a plant at the end of the day. So.
Well, plants are responsible for so much of our day-to-day lives anyway.
They are, but there's lots of research that has shown that it's certainly taken away pain from cancer patients, and some reports that it's cured cancer. I know somebody who says that it's helped with their gluten intolerance, and personally, I think it needs to be researched more. Obviously, it needs to be carefully researched, and I understand, you know, what we need to think about. But at the end of the day, it's a herb.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, let's move on to some other herbs that we can grow at home, because there's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, which is kind of herbcraft. And you teach a lot of herbcraft, and that obviously includes cooking, cosmetic, kind of remedies. Tell us a little bit more about some of those kind of remedies. In particular, I mean, we've got herbal tea in front of us right now. Let's talk about herbal tea and how that can help us cut down on caffeine, for example.
Yeah, so the really nice thing about herbal tea is it's something you can kind of enjoy just for taste. You know, you can just use the things that you like the taste of, but you can also choose the herbs based on the properties that they have. And it's a really, when you talk about herbs as medicines, a tea is a really like safe way to take them. So it's quite a low dose. You don't have to really worry about too many.
But is it such a low dose that it wouldn't have an effect? Because I can imagine a lot of burly men kind of like, well, it's just like pee. I was going to say piss. But yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, is that too low a dose to have an effect on me? Or is it then in my mind that it's working, or what?
Yeah, so it's still going to have an effect, but it's not going to be like a strong enough concentration you have to worry if you if you do have a medical condition, or if you're taking other medication, you don't have to worry. For most of the, like, for all the herbs that we talk about in our courses, there are some that you have to be obviously more careful with, but it's the idea that people can then go away and do it themselves, so make teas that are good for sleep, use other herbs that might be good for their digestion, and could be things that people are cooking with, like things like mint and fennel. So,
talking of digestion, I have terrible digestion, so I get really bad indigestion, and I can't drink caffeine because it gives me acid indigestion. And if that ever kicks off, ginger tea is the way forward. It's the only thing I've ever found that stops it.
Yeah.
Ginger tea.
Ginger is a good fix-all, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Very much so. Yeah. Very good for digestion. I've heard dandelion as well. I think that's meant to be quite good.
Dandelion's good, yeah. The other really nice thing you can have for things like acid reflux or things like heartburn is meadow sweet, which is a really nice one that you can have either fresh or dried.
Okay. I'll try it. Yeah. But this herbal tea that we've got here is very nice, isn't it?
This is a bit of a blend, isn't it?
Yeah, so this is actually something...
It's a mega mix.
This is something called the Mega Mix, which came about when we just, you know, when we're doing all our blending and making up our different herbal blends and things, there's always like odds and ends of things left over.
Wait, tell me this is leftovers. This is the bubble and squeak of the tea world.
But the best kind of, leftovers.
This is the mix.
Yeah, so we mixed it all together one day and we're like, oh, let's just try it. And then, you know, sometimes when we do workshops and we've got leftover herbs, they go on the drying rack. But they might also be bits that kind of we wouldn't sell. And so we just mix them all up into a pot. And one day we're like, oh, maybe we should try it. And then it tasted really good. So.
And it worked out well. I think, you know, that's with herbs, you can mix and match, can't you? You can mix the ones that you may help you, but also for your taste too.
Yeah, exactly. And often we tell people, you know, if you want to have something like sage, which is really good for sore throats and colds, but tastes quite sagey. Yeah. So it tastes like, you know, you're drinking sausages. Then, you know, mix it with things like lemon balm or even things like peppermint. Mm. Things
what about
that
honey?
Yeah, you can use, sage and honey is actually quite nice. But you can blend based on the balance out bitter with sweet thing or, yeah.
And if people are making their own herbal teas at home, do the herbs need to be dried or can they use them in a fresh state? What is better?
This question comes up a lot. So you can use either. Mm-hmm. So generally with fresh herbs, you tend to use double the amount just because they're full of, for most herbs, they're full of water.
And do you need to cut them or tear them? What's the best way to prepare your herbs?
I mean, if you've got a teapot, I just say just bung them in.
Okay. Do you have to crush them, though, to release the oils?
No, if you're boiling, just boiling water from the kettle, you don't need to really tear them. The goodness will come out of them with that water on top. It's good if you're making tea to use a teapot because a lot of the oils in the plants that hold some of the properties, if you just make a tea in your cup, you lose a lot of that, which is some of the, that's the smell, is the oils escaping. So it's quite good. I mean, it's not the end of the world, but it's good practice to use a teapot. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and one more question on herbal tea. I love herbal teas. is kind of like, what are your go-to herbal teas? Do you drink a different tea at a different time of day? Are you also trying to avoid caffeine and that's why you have herbal teas? Or is there any caffeine in herbal teas, for example?
So in all the herbs that we kind of use, all the ones in our tea, they don't have any caffeine in. There are obviously other plants like mate and things that have a similar thing.
What's that, sorry?
Mate, which is like a South American...
Oh, okay, yerba.
Yerba, okay. Yeah.
Well, this is new to me.
This is that's an ilex, isn't it? A type of holly.
I think. So there are plants like that which have not caffeine, but a similar thing to caffeine. But all the ones that are in our teas, most of the ones we use don't have any caffeine, are caffeine free.
Okay.
I kind of gave up coffee, not like intentionally, maybe about 4 years ago. And I think it might have had something to do with the time when I stopped having to go and work in cafes and buy a coffee, coffee just to kind of sit there and not feel bad.
Why wouldn't you sit there with a herbal tea? There's something different about coffee, isn't there?
Because there's a lot here. Yeah.
I think also because just out of going to a cafe and paying like £2 for like hot water in a tea bag. And also I did like coffee, so it's kind of like a treat to have it. So I stopped drinking coffee and I do drink tea, but not that much tea anymore. So I drink a lot of herbs in place of that.
Yeah, what is your favourite then?
So, I mean, lemon verbena is... I'm not allowed to have favourites, but lemon verbena is really up there. I really like rosemary as well. Rosemary is like a really nice one. Mm-hmm. I always say having something like rosemary is quite good in the afternoon. Okay. Especially if you're trying to avoid having like another coffee in the afternoon.
Like the 3 o'clock lull time.
Yeah, exactly. So rosemary is a circulatory stimulant. So it's really good for helping to kind of... it's really good for things like concentration and focus, and it's mildly analgesic, so it can help if you've got a bit of a dull headache in the afternoon, you're trying to power on. And then it doesn't have, you know, if you have a coffee late in the day, so I have it when I'm working late as well sometimes, you don't get that buzz and then the crash, and then you don't kind of feel like you then can't go to sleep when you finally finish.
Well, that's a very good tip. That's a 3 o'clock, 3 o'clock tea now, I think.
And then before you go to bed, what tea would you have then? Chamomile's obvious, but is there any other choices?
So chamomile's kind of like a go-to. So we have one of the blends we make is called sort of the Dream Blend, and that has things like skullcap.
Okay, scutellaria.
Really lovely, So and skullcap is a sedative and a nervine, so it's also really good to have during the day if you're stressed or anxious, but it also helps kind of unwind before you go to sleep. Or things like lemon verbena is another good one.
Oh, that's my favourite lemon fragrance.
You said that earlier on, actually. Yes. We walked by lemon verbena.
It's really lovely. So we tend to kind of, and a lot of our focus is on those like relaxing, quite sedative herbs, which are good if you're kind of stressed or
anxiety, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And they're also just lovely, like lovely herbs to take like throughout the day.
I have noticed, Nat, that you are very calm. So you obviously drink lots of herbal tea. You don't seem anxious or stressed in any way, shape, beautiful form. But also, I have to just say this, you have really super lovely skin.
Oh, thank you.
It's got to be the herbs.
It's got to be the herbs, hasn't it? Do you use herbs in cosmetics yourself, and do you teach how to do that here as well?
Yeah, so one of the really simple things that we will show people how to do in the courses and a lot of the workshops is to make an infused oil using marigolds, or like calendula marigolds.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's really simple. It's kind of showing people how easy it is to make a really nice, like, skin nourishing thing that's suitable for all skin types. And we usually show people how you can then infuse your oil and then add things like beeswax or things like cocoa butter or other kind of waxes and oils to then make, whether it's like a face kind of oil or lip balm or skin balm, and kind of use those things.
Mm. What about soaps?
Soaps, yeah. So I'm not an expert in soap making. I do make my own soaps, and we've done a few soap making workshops, but they're quite stressful to run because.
But you've got herbal tea. Do them at 3 o'clock and give everybody a skull cap tea.
Yeah, they're a bit stressful because when you make soap from scratch, you have to. So one of the things you have to use is lye, which is caustic soda. And then so you have that, and when you add that in, it has like a chemical reaction, and if you always have to add the lye, which is like a kind of or caustic soda, which is a powder, into the water, and if you do it wrong and do it the other way, the whole thing explodes. And then the other thing the other thing you combine it with is like really hot oils and all the waxes, and then you mix the two together and you use like a hand electric hand whisk to mix it until it gets to the point. It's a bit like making jam, like reaching the setting point.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't whisk it enough, when people take home a little mold of it, then it won't set. But if you over whisk it, it turns into like horrible mashed potato thing. But you still can make soap from. So in a workshop, it's just I always leave with like a terrible migraine.
Yeah, and
feel quite stressed.
But you need that rosemary tea.
It's something that a lot of people ask us about, so I should maybe try again.
Okay.
And obviously, you recommend growing herbs. What do you think about buying herbs from the supermarket?
Ooh, controversial. So I've done a few experiments with supermarket herbs. And I think it's a bit hit and miss, really, depending on where they're coming from. So
okay.
I often tell people, don't lose heart when you buy buy herbs from the supermarket and they die on your windowsill, and kind of explain to them that, like, you know, this pot that they're in is probably just good enough for one plant. Mm-hmm. And there's like
20.
Yeah, like 50 seeds in there. So,
but it doesn't always work if you repot them either, does it?
No, again, mixed results. And like my dad, who's like really keen, like...
I'm just knocking the table over.
So my dad, who's like really keen growing, will just literally like sit in his greenhouse like all day, just, you know, with his music on. He grows basil and things, but they sometimes buy some from the supermarket and he'll like separate them out. I think basil is one that seems to do better than maybe some of the other ones.
Okay, I think I know what the problem is. I don't know if you've realised, but because they obviously have to be transported, so if the soil was to fall out of the container, then it would obviously make a pretty mess in transporting.
Mm.
But I think they mix glue into the compost, because I used to work for a mail order plant company.
Wow.
A lot of our baby plugs were with glue plugs. So the glue is mixed in, and then what you have is this kind of really solid block of compost that obviously travels a lot easier, but is very difficult to get water to penetrate into there. And I think the supermarket herbs are sown into this glue compost, so it doesn't all fall out when they travel, but then that makes them very, very difficult to care for when you get them home, unless you sit them in a reservoir of water, perhaps. That could be a way around it, and then you're really soaking that water in. But that, I think that's why they're almost, sometimes it seems like they're programmed to die, doesn't it?
Yeah, I usually say that to people, and that's fascinating. I didn't
programmed
know that.
Programmed to die.
No,
yeah.
I often tell people, you know, this is as close as a plant will ever get to being a test tube baby. It's like been grown inside with grow lights.
Mm.
It's been nice and warm, and then suddenly you've got it home to your probably like
same
shady,
as buying from
like
IKEA
things.
Plants sometimes.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
They do still survive. Do you know what I mean? So there's got to be something more to it.
Yeah. So generally, perhaps stay away from supermarket herbs, but don't be discouraged if you've got some.
I think if you need them, it's nice to buy because they're fresher, obviously, than buying some of the other things. But I think don't. don't beat yourself up if they, if they die.
Well, I guess they're so easy to grow from seed anyway.
Yeah.
Or what about if people are buying the cut herbs in the plastic packets? Can they root those in water? Would that be a way around it?
I've tried that with, like, again, with mixed results, but things like rosemary and things like, I mean, mint always works because it's an easy thing to just put
in.
You
can't stop mint in
water, but it's always worth, I always say to people, it's always worth trying. Yeah. And, you know, plants don't always, they're like people, don't always behave in the way that they're
That's what I always say.
meant to. So
just like people.
People don't behave right, do they?
It's worth trying. So you are also connected to the Herb Society, aren't you? So you, your life is basically one big bundle of herbs.
One big herb parade,
So tell us about that. What are you doing with the Herb Society?
So I joined the Herb Society as a trustee a couple of years ago. Mm. And I just, I joined kind of wanting to find out a bit more about their work and try and help in some way or kind of link in what we were doing to kind of be connected with, you know, a wider network. Like, we're quite focused, obviously, you know, in London, but it's interesting to see what the rest of the UK is doing. So we've just kind of been looking at, I sort of helped initially with some of the social media stuff, but also just helping with thinking about more long-term strategy. And also we're looking at the moment about what we can do with a bit more of a focus around education and some stuff maybe with schools and children.
But dare I say you're probably a younger face within the Herb Society. How have you been received? How has that gone?
I think really well. So I think they were really trying to recruit for younger... I mean, they're always trying to recruit for younger members.
Oh, were you headhunted?
I actually saw something on Twitter, which was really interesting, because I was like, I wouldn't have heard about the Herb Society if it hadn't, if they hadn't been on social media, unless I'd seen it at an event. So I think it's been quite good to have... there's a few of us who joined her a bit younger, just kind of come in and give an insight into what our generation are like and maybe what they might buy into in terms of joining.
The cannabis.
So what is, like, other than kind of your workshops, your courses, what does a typical day for you involve here at Herbal HQ?
A typical day, so no 2 days are really ever the same, but a typical day might be, so we might have, so today we had a course in the morning, so we're running a course with a group of really lovely women who are based in Hackney, and the course is all around, it's aimed at people who are unemployed, so it's aimed around kind of building skills and confidence and people meeting each other. So we were making something called Fire Cider, which is, again, a really easy thing to make. So you just, all you need is apple cider vinegar, and you just fill a jar or jam jar with that, and then add in things like ginger. You can use powdered spices like chili and turmeric and garlic, and we use things like horseradish and rosemary, and you leave it to infuse for like 4 weeks, and then you get this stuff that you can just drink, which if you've got a cold will just like kill everything. But you can use it in the winter to build your immune system.
You need that recipe.
Yeah, it's great. So I was doing that in the morning, and then in the afternoon I might be in here. So we've got, at the moment we've got people who are ordering like bespoke herbal tea blends, so a couple of places like yoga studios and things who want to kind of stock our teas but also have their own like house blend. So I might be putting some herbs together, and then in the, sometimes in the evenings when I'm working, so we have like a herb group who are a group of people who have come to a course in the past, and it was the idea of the herb group is it's a monthly thing which brings people back together. And we're hoping that next year we can do something more regularly and maybe have a weekly meet up in one of the gardens.
Do you get any time off?
Get that much time off. But I'm sure, it's kind of, it's, you know, when it's something you're really passionate about, it's really hard to take time off.
When your passion becomes your career, you know, we often chat about this, don't we, Ellen? It's like we're just doing plants all the time. It's all we think about.
Because you're doing what you love, so it doesn't feel like work sometimes. Where can we find you on social media then? Where can we find Hackney Herbal?
So we're on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, at Hackney Herbal.
And website?
Hackneyherbal.com.
And what about if anyone would like to help you out or come along and volunteer?
Yeah, so if you go onto our website, there's a, like, if you go onto the volunteer tab, you can just send us a message that way.
Beautiful.
Great.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I I've just pressed the record button with my nose. How cool am I?
Now you're sweaty nose tips on my phone screen.
But I'm multitasking.
As a freelancer would.
Exactly. And what are we talking about today? Say it in unison.
Freelancing.
Oh, like Bananarama.
Who's our third person, though?
The dog.
Yeah, we've got two lovely dogs sleeping by us at the moment.
Oh, they're really cute.
Aren't they? Like, they're like in a little S-shaped.
I know.
Anyway, but that's what you can do when you're freelance. You can work with your dogs next to
you. You can. And you can also lay on a comfy sofa watching Emmerdale on catch-up and keep in touch with your emails by dictation.
Yes.
Do you know what, Ellen? I have to confess, I've sometimes written articles laying horizontally, watching Hollyoaks, using dictation, and it seems crazy that I can earn money doing that.
I know.
Because you wouldn't be able to do that in the workplace, but why not?
What does it matter?
Because I was just as creative. I was probably more creative than if I would be sitting at a desk being forced to work.
That's exactly the key, isn't it? It's your creativity.
Yeah, and I feel so privileged to be able to do that.
If you think about it, it's sort of sexy, you know? Because you're allowing your creativity to happen and be however, wherever you want.
Definitely.
And that's what freelancing gives you, which is space, isn't it?
Where's the strangest place you wrote an article then, Ellen Mary?
The strangest place I've written an article is not the strangest, but I'm going to tell you, because I can't think of a strange place, but I'm going to tell you the nicest place.
Uh-huh.
It was on Balmoral Beach in Sydney. So I was over there for a while because my husband works out there a lot, and I decided I was going to walk to the beach, and the beach I went to took way longer to get there. It took me ages to get there because I was just admiring all of the trees and plants, and it was just
I'm
so
always
beautiful.
The same when I walk somewhere, it takes me at least 50% longer than
taking photographs and admiring all the plants and everything around you. And I realized that because it had taken me so long, and then if I was going to do the same walk back, I might as well just get on and do what I needed to do there. And I sat on the beach, and I can remember typing at least two articles sitting there. And there was a shark out in the water. So the helicopter kept coming over.
Really?
Yeah, and though it was netted, so the beach is netted, so obviously you could swim so far out.
Yeah.
But there was a shark out in the water. And I can remember just sitting there typing. But you know what? I felt almost like a whole sense of joy.
Yeah.
Everyone was safe, so there's no problem. But I was sitting on this beach on the other side of the world, and it must have been October, November. And so I'm writing a different seasonal article on this beautiful hot beach with a shark out in the water.
Having an epiphany.
It was just beautiful. And I just sat there and thought, how lucky am I?
Really, I'm the same because my partner from time to time has worked in New York, now in China. And so sometimes I'm there doing my work remotely because, you know, apart from TV appearances and, you know, different things that I do that I need to be there in person, you know, a lot of what I do is online. And also a lot of what I do is discovering what people do in other cultures in horticultural terms.
Yeah.
So you do have to pinch yourself from time to time. But of course, it's still hustle and it's still hard work because you know what it's like being freelance. You do feel like you have to be switched on all the time now.
Yeah.
Like if you were working in an office, you don't necessarily have to work when you're away from your desk. I know it's changed a bit with emails coming through on iPhones, but generally you don't have to work a weekend. That's quite rare.
Yeah.
But as a freelancer, we would. And also, from that moment we wake up in the morning, we feel like we have to be productive as well.
Yeah. And that it's taken quite a while to get used to that, actually. Mm. And sometimes I will type copy or answer some urgent emails before I've even got out of bed.
Mm.
And some days I felt really guilty about that. But actually,
why guilty?
Why
That's
do I
efficiency.
Feel? Yeah, because actually, it doesn't matter whether I get up first and then do them, or do them in bed and then get up, because they're being done. And that's what freelance life kind of affords.
It's weird,
doesn't
it? Yeah.
But it's a really hard balance to get, because it's actually really hard work. The amount of hours I work are actually probably more than if I worked in an office.
Yeah, for sure.
Way more.
Yeah.
But
We have time off, we feel guilty.
Yeah.
Which is strange.
Yeah. It is, isn't it? It's really
so
odd.
Weird. And like any of my friends will probably be like, oh, Michael does nothing.
Yeah.
I do a heck of a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely.
Yeah. But it's hard to define it as well.
It
if someone
is.
Asks what your role is, what do you say?
Do you know, it depends. essentially, I'm a gardener. Do you know what I mean? So it depends on where I am, what I'm doing, who I'm talking to. If someone's asking, and I can't even really be bothered to explain, because sometimes you just get tired of explaining.
Yeah, but then they'll ask you why they're plant
died. And I just say, I'm a gardener. And because that, you know, that is what I am. But I generally say I'm a writer, radio show host, you know, I do anything to do with gardening. And often people look really confused at that. They're like, what does that mean? Yeah, I don't really know how else to describe it, I suppose.
Do you also, something I do, I have a play down or don't mention doing TV work. Because the minute if, you know, like one of my main roles at the moment is being a TV presenter. Yeah. But then to introduce yourself as that to someone is so weird, because people have this kind of fame weirdness, and I'm not introducing myself as a TV presenter to be boastful or egotistical, but the other person may see it that way, or if they're kind of then starstruck by it, then it's weird and you don't really want. But then how else to describe what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Because that's it. So
have you tried it?
I don't know.
Next time somebody says to you, what do you do? Respond by saying, oh, I'm a horticultural TV presenter.
I guess so. I always kind of answer in a really sketchy way that makes me sound like a drug dealer. I'm always kind of like, yeah, I just do a few different projects, you know. But it is... It's horrible. It's really difficult to, A, kind of explain what I do, and B, deliver that in a way that isn't boastful, weird,
or you could just say
to someone, do you not know who I am? Then, you know.
I'd love to.
But it's not
that.
Even that, because,
just for fun.
You know, we do stuff on TV, but by no stretch of the imagination are we famous.
Oh, gosh,
you
no.
Know, geez. And, no, no. And it's not even.
No.
I don't know. I think sometimes how people imagine this stuff is compared to how it is very different.
Yeah, very different indeed. It's interesting though, isn't it? I do love freelance life. There are days where I get tired of it, and you know, some days can't be bothered.
But that might be the time to have a day off.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's allowing yourself to do that, and that's what's really hard, isn't it?
Because you do work at weekends, obviously. I work
all
at weekends
week.
And I have to be careful to then make sure I've got the time off in the week.
Yeah.
But because everyone else works in the week, you feel kind of your inner, what do you call it, compass is telling you to work as well.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. It is. And sometimes creativity doesn't come at the time for what we do.
But it has to come before a deadline.
A deadline, no matter what. But if you were working, say you were working a 9-to-5, you have to do what you're doing in that period. But if I some days I can sit down to write copy and there's nothing there. I've got nothing. And I know the deadline's tomorrow, so I might go away for an hour and go potter in the garden, sow some seeds. But then I might be working till 11 o'clock that night, writing that copy.
And you'll be doing that in an office. But I always find, if I'm ever working at kind of the table during the day and I have a break, I always feel weird and guilty. But then if I was in an office environment, I'd probably merrily be wandering around chatting to people. That's wasted time. But when it's now me as a freelancer, I feel like anything that's not this focused head down is wasting time. You know?
No gossiping around the water.
Exactly. No one to gossip to, is there?
You can't plant your bum on the photocopier and take a copy.
But it is, it's very weird. I love it, but I don't think you ever shake that feeling of guilt.
No.
Or kind of restlessness, you know? Isn't that a cool word?
Restlessness.
It's like cellar door.
Yes, you kind of just never really... Do you think?
Yeah.
You never really relax, I suppose, 100%. No. Unless you're away from it, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like you don't relax on weekends as a freelancer. You almost have to have those real time out holidays, and they become more, I guess the holidays become more of an extreme contrast really, because you have to switch off, so
you have to wouldn't change it for the world, not at all.
But I think a lot of people see it as a big old holiday, but really it's kind of, yes, it's fun and we're privileged, but it is hard work
Are you going to eat the rest of your cookie now?
What?
You've got half a cookie there.
Oh, there's another one in the bag.
Oh, you've got two cookies.
Yeah. It's a chocolate and what's it?
You need that to feed your creativity, huh?
Exactly.
The Plant-Based Podcast is sponsored by Sutton's, suppliers of gardeners' favourite products since 1806. Unsurprisingly, Sutton's now have everything you need for your outside space. award-winning flower and vegetable plants, garden furniture and equipment, plus gifts for gardeners. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.